string theory all the time, and I will tell you the motivation. But I have not been able to do that. But then eventually I realized that actually the thing was interesting in itself, and I'll try to convince you of that. But once this paper was finished, we realized that actually there is a way to get at it from string theory directly, but today I will not talk about that. This is work in progress. So I will postulate a new type of sun product, which is inspired by the standard non-commutative Moyal product, and it is a triple product. So instead of multiplying F star G, I multiply F sun F G, F sun G F sun H. So now it's simpler than it sounds. So. And then promote this product to an interaction vertex in field theory, as it is done also in the standard non-commutative theory. So the main part of the talk is the analysis of perturbative interactions in this field theory, which means coupling and mass renormalization. And what I will show is that at one loop, there is an infinite mass renormalization, which is the same as in standard field theory, so quadratic Kelly divergent diagram, which is not modified by any of this non-commutativity. And coupling renormalization is finite already at one loop level and presumably is finite at higher loop levels as well. There's no reason to expect any problems, but has not been strictly speaking proven. For the case of two-point functions, so mass renormalization, the point is that since one loop gives divergent diagrams, one definitely should look at two-loop two-point function and find that this one is has a finite and an infinite contribution actually, and the infinite contribution can be renormalized in the standard way, and the finite piece you should include in the effective action, for example, and it has effects in the low energies. And finally, I will show that in this theory, one of the problems that exist in the standard non-commutative theory is cured, which is the infrared singularities in the effective action. And in this theory, they are softer, so the effective action, they're still there in a sense, but the singularity is softer than in the standard theory, and so the effective action remains finite. So that's the outline, and so let me just show you what this sun product is actually. So as you can see, I take three functions whose arguments are lie in Rn. In particular, I will consider 3 plus 1 dimensional case, flat space. And then consider this pseudo, I think it's called, mathematicians call this pseudo differential operator acting on these guys in the multilinear fashion, in the sense that, so what you should do is you should expand the exponential, you'll get 1 plus linear order in theta, quadratic, etc. And at every order, this is some kind of a differential operator where ddx is act on f of x, ddy acts on g of y, and ddzx of h of z. And then after taking all of that, you should take x, y, and z at some point x0. And that will be your sum product at the point of x0. So everything is done completely analogously to the Moyal product, except that now it is a triple product. Theta should be taken completely as an anti-symmetric form, and in 3 plus 1 dimensions you can see that actually let me write it down on the blackboard. So a 3 form in 4 dimensions is dual to a vector. So you can write a vector, let's call it psi lambda, which is the dual where this guy is the completely anti-symmetric tensor in 4 dimensions. So as long as this dual vector is time-like, you can always choose a coordinate system in which this vector has only component along time direction. So its components are theta 0, 0, 0. So spatial components equal to 0. That demonstrates that you can always choose a frame in which theta takes this form then, clearly. And this is the form of theta that I will work on. This is just to illustrate the fact that it is in fact the most general situation in 4 dimensions. In higher dimensions you can have more complicated things going on, but in 4 dimensions this is the most simple, and I don't think...
What do you mean by non-associative?
Okay, so non-associative means that by that I simply mean that if you have taken g and h, that I don't want to modify products of two functions. So if you took first, multiply g and h according to normal rules, and then multiply it by f in the ordinary way, I mean, so if you put brackets like that...
So the binary operation is just ordinary operation?
Yes, that's the, exactly. So the binary operation is not changed.
I don't understand. Then it seems to me if you take this only for the quartic, say modify the quartic, right?
Yes.
GHP.
Okay.
Then it's even simpler because then I have just the epsilon, right?
Yes. Well, let me show you what happens in field theory.
You don't even break Lorentz symmetry in this, because in this theory, Lorentz is broken.
Lorentz symmetry is broken, that's correct.
But if you take modify the quartic piece with epsilon, you don't even break Lorentz symmetry.
I will show why that is not... Yeah, that's correct. But I will just get to it on the next transparency.
Yeah.
So, the comment is that this does break Lorentz invariance, but because the spatial rotation invariance is not broken, so the theory at low energies will still have Galilean invariance in a sense. So that at least is somehow more realistic than in standard non-commutative theory, where there is a plane in which strange things are happening, and if you happen to have a momentum along the plane rather than normal to the plane, very strange things happen. Here, spatial rotation invariance is not broken, and rotation and translation invariance is not broken.
If one direction is compactified, what reduces to the usual Moyal product? If you have a direction where the space-time is and there is more radius, then one of the derivatives disappears.
Why? Why do you say that? I mean, you... As far as I understand, in standard non-commutative case, if you take the non-commutative plane to be actually a torus, then you can realize the operator algebra in terms of some unitary matrices, and things go through. I think I think that the derivative is not necessarily zero, because you can have this Kaluza-Klein modes on the torus. And so, yeah, I have not tried to realize this as operator algebra on a T3, for example. Somebody can try. I don't know, but I have the following speculation. I should say is only a speculation about what the underlying quantum structure may be. You know that the standard non-commutative plane can be realized in terms of operators by just saying that x and y are just canonically conjugate operators, so x and p of quantum mechanics, basically. So you may ask, in this case, what would be the operator realization? And, I don't know. But here is a possible way to get at it. So in the case of a star product, if you take the product of coordinate functions, so let's say x and y, you will get the following. You'll get x star y is xy plus I theta, and yx is xy minus I theta. And so the star commutator is theta, so that this is how you can see that, reproduce the algebra by considering products of the coordinate functions. So here you would get some such things, and then you can combine these relations into this identity here. I should say that if you write this analogous thing with another commutator, which is really the Jacobi identity, you would get zero, in fact. So Jacobi identity is not violated by these operators. But
because it's not the Jacobi, right?
Yeah, this is not a Jacobi, no. But if you write the real thing, then you will get a zero on the right-hand side. So, but this question has not been fully investigated, I must say. Instead, I want to concentrate on the perturbative theories of a field theory. I write the Lagrangian for one real scalar field, which is right there, and one should somehow make a prescription for what to do here. So you could ask me, for example, why didn't you multiply phi with phi, so that would be phi square, ordinary product of two phis, and then multiply phi 1, phi 2, and then with these two guys. That would not lead to something interesting for the following reason. You have a... Okay, no, let's investigate what happens in this case, and then I will say why is the other case not so interesting. So really the term in the Lagrangian should be understood as there is four particles coming into this interaction vertex with momenta p1, p2, p3, and p4. The sum of the momenta is conserved, so it's zero, and then you can symmetrize over all possible permutations. So here you should sum over all possible ways of writing these permutations, and you will get that in fact all of these non-commutative phases are equal to each other. So for example, epsilon ijk p1i p2j P3K is equal to minus epsilon IJK P1 P2 P4. because P4 is minus P1 plus P2 plus P3, and everything drops out, so you just get one minus sign. So in this whole, in the 24 possible permutations of this guy, there is 12 with a plus sign here and 12 with a minus sign, and overall you get a cosine, so you get a real interaction vertex, which presumably ensures unitarity of the theory. So now we have some interaction vertex which is going to be oscillator and momenta, and this is how ultraviolet divergences are going to be cured, so which is very similar to the standard non-commutative case. Now, this phase has a very nice geometrical interpretation. So because only the spatial parts of the momenta are involved here, you can construct a tetrahedron which has 1, 2, 3, 4 faces. It's an elementary theorem in geometry that the sum of the area normals of the faces is equal to zero, and the converse is true. So if somebody gives me four vectors that add up to zero, one can always draw a tetrahedron for which these vectors are area normals. By area normal, I mean a vector normal to the face and whose length is equal to the area. So then I want to compute what is that that phase. So clearly the area of the phase is just the vector product of these edge vectors. So for example, P1 is 1/2 L1 cross L2, etc. And then when you make this triple product between P1, P2, and P3, you can substitute them, rearrange things, and so you get that this is equal to the volume squared of this tetrahedron. So this construction is convenient to see the cases where the phase is going to be degenerate, because if the phase is degenerate, then the vertex is the plain old one, and there's no modification. That happens when this tetrahedron is degenerate. So let's consider the one-loop diagrams in this theory. So there is a mass renormalization diagram, which, because at this vertex there is P, P, K, and K, any triple combination of them vanishes. And so this diagram is completely unmodified. It should be regulated with your favorite regularization scheme. For example, cutoff regularization is just fine for a scalar field theory. And then you should consider the coupling one-loop diagram. So what do we have here? We have four particles with momenta P, Q, R, and S coming in, and the particle momentum K going around in the loop. There's two propagators and the two phases sitting at each interaction vertex. You can see that for generic values of PQRS, the integral is finite. It can be calculated exactly, or at least I know how to calculate it exactly for the case when momenta are much smaller than the non-commutative scale, which is theta to the minus 1/3. So the result is completely standard, as in standard field theory. This is the finite part, which you can recognize, and this is the part which is normally divergent, which should be regulated. So the effective cutoff, which is produced by all this non-commutativity, is this exact expression. So as long as P, Q, R, and S are such that this is non-vanishing, the diagram converges. The reason why everything can be computed, actually, you see, is because if you introduce Schwinger parameters, the K integration is still Gaussian. At higher loops, this is no longer the case because you have cubic dependence of the phase on momenta, so it is hard to compute higher loop diagrams. But at one and two loops, you still are able to do Gaussian integrals. And so the result is, well, yeah, the result can be computed exactly, more or less. So what does this all mean for the coupling? So the coupling is going to be... I'm sorry, there is a wrong sign here. This should be a plus, as far as I remember. So in standard field theory, you get the result that the coupling, the bare coupling, at which is defined at large energy, is becoming very strong. So the same thing is here. The relation at one loop is exactly the same with the cutoff being this thing. So the physical coupling at low energies is smaller than the bare coupling. Is renormal. And when P goes to zero, it drops down. So therefore...
physical coupling is smaller than the bare one?
Yeah, just...
No,
it's the other way around. No, it's just like it should be in scalar field theory. The bare coupling is very strong, and so in standard field theory you have the problem of Landau pole. Let me get to it.
So here you still have the problem.
Well, no. So the point is this. So the integrals which are have been computed at low energies. At high energies, they compute much more dramatically faster. They start to converge exponentially. So there is no Landau. So there is no Landau pole. The coupling runs like this, like in this diagram. It's not big enough to show everything. So this is the result for low momenta. At high momenta, these integrals converge exponentially fast. So you get to bare coupling at once you reach the momenta of the non-commutative scale. But you can be worried that so here, if you look, the logarithm is actually negative, right? When p is small, so you can be worried that at very small values of momenta, you will get actually negative coupling, which I have here drawn with a dashed line. So at a non-perturbatively small value of momenta, which goes like this, e to the minus 1 over lambda, so at weak coupling, this is very small, extremely small momenta, this coupling may become negative. So the problem has been exchanged in some sense. On the one hand, instead of the Landau pole, now you have to worry about this infrared destabilization. But I believe that this is only an apparent problem. The solution is to do the full RG analysis, which is going to which gives you the non-perturbative information about the running of the coupling and gives you this kind of a result. Yeah, so this formula is like before. But this formula is valid. Okay, so the point is that this formula is valid at low energies. Once you get to higher energies, and you want to go to moment.
But the zero charge is also it's an apparent property, right? The problem of, if you remember, I mean, the problem that remembers
Yes, the problem of
charge, if you whatever bare coupling constant you have, if say electrode is massless, so you can go to larger and larger distances, the physical charge would be totally screened.
It is the same here. Yes, absolutely.
This formula is printed, right? It should be lambda zero instead of squared in the denominator.
Here you mean there should not be a square? Yes, that's.
So this scale is just where the denominator vanishes. Is that clear?
No. This formula is valid for small p. So the log is negative, and so the coupling is just goes to zero at zero. At higher energies, you should not trust this formula. You should go. So the land of pole, I mean the fact that the theory is infrared trivial still remains, but there is no problem of the land of pole in the sense that if you have some non-zero physical coupling, then it becomes infinite at some high value of momenta. So in that sense, the problem has been cured.
So, but this place where the interaction changes sign, that's also not perturbative in a sense, because the perturbative term is the same magnitude as the bare term there, so you can't trust your perturbation theory. The higher interaction should also be large. In other words, the log rooms of perturbation theory both also in the infrared.
Normally, I don't know if there's some strength with the powers of lambda, but normally you say, okay.
I think there is a misprint. I think
logarithm is large, and you correct all terms alpha times logarithm. That means that you can go to the limit when alpha times logarithm is large, and alpha is still small, and it's there.
But then that leads to this bottom formula.
Yeah, the other formula seems to be correct,
and there seems to be no problem with the changing sign.
Doesn't change sign because logarithm is always negative.
Negative, yes.
So it's just the denominator is always positive, but it becomes large, and so the coupling constant goes to zero.
Yes, exactly.
For complete infrared screen, in this sense, the infrared is like this.
So the theory is infrared free. Yeah, that's right.
It a little bit bothers me because usually your theory is massive, right?
Yes.
Usually in massive theories, the running of the coupling is frozen once you reach the mass. You cannot have momentum p less than the mass, usually.
Because there are no logarithms below. When the external momentum is lower than the mass, the logarithm regime is changed to a power regime, and everything freezes, and you cannot. It's only in the massless case that you can totally screen in the infrared.
So that means that here, the coupling doesn't work?
I don't know. So the question is, what is the relation between your p and the mass parameter? I suspect that your p cannot be smaller than the mass parameter.
Well, in the standard case, as far as I understand, the thing that enters is the total four momentum. So you can, in some sense, there is a p.
Yeah, this always happens in the coupling doesn't stop running when it gets to the.
Yeah, because here there is only the spatial part of momentum. No, nothing prevents the spatial part of momentum to become small.
Theta times p was a cutoff. So it's just the running with it. It's just the same as a UV running where you replace theta with a cutoff.
No, but then now speaking about the infrared.
Yeah. But it's just the same. It's because theta times p is the UV cutoff.
Yeah.
Right? So, in a sense, what you're seeing is a reflection of the ultraviolet running, which, of course, doesn't care about masses. Except you're seeing it in the infrared. It always happens that it's not the UV phase. So mass generation doesn't stop running couplings. So it's a disaster in asymptotically free theories because there's still the infrared on the outpole.
So, but these things happen. These things happen at non-perturbatively low values of momenta. So, nothing prevents you from taking spatial part of momentum very small, smaller than mass or smaller than anything. But the whole thing appears at non-perturbatively small values of. Yeah, but okay. So the good thing is that no matter how high in energy you go, your coupling still remains. You can take the bare coupling to be small, and so your perturbation theory is valid at arbitrarily high energies. That's one of the statements of. Exactly. This combination, more or less, is the cutoff. So, is what regulates. So this is. I find this very interesting. So
it's the spatial part of the momentum.
Yes, it is the spatial part. I'm sorry, yes, so in this formula there is the space momentum, yes?
So p equals 0 means that the energy equals the mass?
Yeah.
So you never go to energy?
Yeah, so there is not. Yeah, so you can go to low momentum, that's the point, yeah. So because the one loop mass was infinite, so let's look at a two loop mass now. So the only interesting diagram is this one. So there is two momentum integrations. Again, you should introduce Feynman parameters. I write these expressions for the massless case, but you know, as you understand, that doesn't change much the consideration at high energies. The mass is just. Would go along further, right? The mass is good if you want to get rid of infrared divergences here. Everything is tied to ultraviolet divergences. That's why I removed the masses. But this is not very essential. Again, you can... The momentum integrations are still Gaussian. And this is the result. Now... The integration of the Feynman parameters is more difficult here, so. But on general grounds, you can make the statement that the final result has this scaling. So this p squared is the four momentum squared. This, as the notation suggests, is the absolute value of the spatial momentum. And theta, the non-commutative parameter. So the f function is kind of smooth, has a smooth dependence on its argument, and the result again is completely analogous to standard if you identify the cutoff with this theta times p. The fact that the Taylor expansion of f has p square in it, and therefore there are terms which diverge and are in the two-foiled function, which are proportional to p square, means that you have wave function renormalization at two loop, just like in standard field theory.
Does this have some quadratic singularity?
Linear. It's a linear. So the reason why I'm showing this is on the next page. This is important for the effective action. So, so there's two things you can consider. One is the effective 4-point potential. So you should make such an integration over moment of the four phis if you want to compute the effective action for quartic effective action. Insert a delta function, and then the result from the four-point function. It's clear that there will be some values of momenta for which the argument of the logarithm vanishes, and so you get some divergence in p's. But however, this is a logarithm, so it is very slow, and is completely killed by the measure in the integral. For example, you know that integral of log x dx is finite. Even though this function diverges at zero, the integral from zero to any value is finite. So in the same way, this integral is going to be finite, despite having the arguments seemingly having a singularity in P. So that was a logarithmic singularity. Now, the two-point function had quadratic divergences, so there is a power-like singularity there. And the integral is this one here. However, again, because the singularity is only of the kind of 1 over p, and the integration measure has d3p in it, so I have read. Okay, so this is much better. You can just look at this. We have 1 over p times the scale of non-commutativity cubed, and the measure is d3p. Again, this is finite at zero. Is 1 over p is not singular enough at zero to give an infinite result. Now, in standard non-commutative theory, again, the thing that appears downstairs is the momentum in the non-commutative plane, but it appears as momentum squared times a non-commutative scale to the fourth. So the overall dimensionality of these terms is the same, is mass squared. But this one instead has a logarithmic divergence. So is a d2p over p squared has a logarithmic divergence at zero. And this is the famous infrared problem in the non-commutative theory, which people have speculated how to solve this using some field redefinitions or appealing to some stringy effects and so on. But actually, there is no completely satisfactory resolution of this problem in that case. But here you can see that, as promised, even though there is such a singular term, the effective action remains finite. So, because it is a Friday, and it's almost 5 o'clock. I think I will stop here.
So, do you think that normal ordering removes all of the UV?
Right. So normal ordering would presumably remove the quadratic divergences in the two-point function, and then the theory, it seems, it's completely finite then.
I mean, I mean that nature is some sort of product like that embedded in somewhere.
Like, can you imagine, say, coupling to a Kalman particle to a Kalman field producing this kind of effective field theory, but still an external field problem?
I think you mean the the case where the B field. So the standard Newtonian field theory is the case where B field is constant. And so you're asking whether this may arise in cases where the B field has actually dB is non-zero. So the free form.
dB is a
constant free form. Well, that was more than my motivation, and until writing and finishing this paper, I had no real connection to strings. So, but now we are working on that. So we have. I cannot report the results right now. It seems that we are finding out the connection indeed.
Can I ask about the infrared
references?
Are you planning that like log of p in general field theory are not a problem because they're integrable? You do get the term log of some momentum.
This is in the renormalized.
So how come it's not infrared divergence?
What can be demonstrated is that assuming that there was a so assuming that you are not taking some very strange concentration of phis around the place where it is singular, which is a reasonable thing to assume, then the effective action is finite. Now, what is your question again?
If I'm trying to calculate, four-point function of external particle that are separating the momenta that are in the divergent region, I seem to get a reasonably large result, and there's nothing guaranteed to me that the second one is not going to be larger than that. I just don't understand the claim.
Okay.
I agree that if it's like an external particle with large momenta, it will provide a cutoff for this integral.
Yes.
But, this is true for any infrared divergence, right? I'm good. In other words, this argument seems to me a little bit too general. Any you're allowing for any logarithmic divergences now in any theory?
Well, you have in mind that probably that there is some other problems that crop up if you have such singularities. Now, I'm not familiar what you would be referring to. So, presumably,
I'm trying to understand the claim that this is better than the usual infrared problem in optimization.
Well, it is not in the logarithmic case. The problem appears in this case where it is power-like. And in the standard non-commutativity case, the singularity is non-integrable, whereas in this case it is integrable. That's all the claim that I'm making.
Okay, let me rephrase that. The standard infrared problem is that if you do further loop calculation and you consider scattering of particles in the problematic region, the other calculation will give you larger results in the one loop. So perturbation theory will break down at low enough external momentum. This seems to be still the case here.
Okay. I think I know what you mean. Okay, so there is this famous diagrams which are obtained by chaining. So you take this, and suppose you obtain that this was finite, but then you chain a bunch of them like that. These issues have been considered in the literature. So the in the standard case is known that this problem. You should sum over insertions of n such guys, and even though each one is finite, the sum may or may not be infinite, because if you have this momentum going in the loop is p, and each of these diagrams has some, let's say, logarithmic divergence in p, and then you're asking whether once you integrate over p, what happens? Well, in the standard case, it is known that the answer depends on the sign sitting here. So in one case, you can shift the problem into the Euclidean region, and there's no problem.
I agree with that. I'm just saying the problem, in my mind, still exists, and you would need to read some perturbation theory, which you might not know. Maybe we can talk about that later.
Yes. I don't know whether actually I have not proved that in my theory there is no problem with this kind of chained diagram. That is.
May I ask kind of probably it's a forbidden question, but from an outsider, that's all. Why would you need this theory for? Do you have anything, any solution of any problem in mind, or just for the fun of it, or what?
Okay, so the motivation was, as I said, it was to consider the very interesting question in string theory, which is when the B field is not constant. It's extremely deep and important problem, I think, in string theory. But however, you can say that, okay, but this has nothing to do with that. This is just some arbiter. What I have done is postulated some arbitrary inspired guess at what it may be, and then I'm playing with that. So from that point of view, that's bad. Now, on the other hand, you can ask, is this good for any application to particle physics? And the answer is no. I have thought about, the only particle in nature which really should have a 5-4 interaction is the Higgs particle, the only scalar particle, in fact, that is out there. So you may ask, maybe, what would happen if the Higgs particle had such interactions? But I have not investigated that. Now, with Young Mills is another story. The problem with Young Mills is that in Young Mills, the interesting vertex is not the 4-point vertex, but the 3-point vertex. But this theory does not modify cubic vertices, as you can very well see.
Can you make a gauging variant?
Yeah. So then you may say that maybe the 3-point vertex is not modified, but the 4-point vertex gets this non-commutative phase. But then you're right; there may be problems with gauge invariance and so on. So there is no obvious way to generalize this to Young-Mills theory. And that is another reason why this paper was sitting in my desk for 2 years. Any other questions?